They're gonna be at the lot.
And what's your name?
My name's Kevin Kilcoyne.
Kevin, okay, perfect. Kilcoyne, C-O...
K-I-L-C-O-Y.
I say it like I...
Be somewhere more logical. Between the two of y'all.
I think.
Make me feel better.
Yeah, what do you think?
A bunch of action. And then, maybe.
This is your meeting.
But yeah.
I'm just helping you make facilitate. You and the council member.
They're already good ones.
Yeah.
No, I forget, thank you.
One of the reasons people just kind of go in. Along.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember, I'm remembering. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Richard, by you, so y'all can...
Okay.
Give each other comfort.
Hey, Cap.
How are you, sir?
Good.
Glad to see you.
Oh, he's right in there, yeah.
Good. How do you want?
Kyle, you want to do this?
We want to cover, what and what order. This was a logical order, because I mean, I think we're only mainly dealing with the enforcement. Towing and impound and all that stuff.
Richard there. Hey, Richard. The Linwood Roberts room is sitting right off of the main. Are you the...
Asking for money. He could be elected god.
All the technology in the world.
Okay.
But you're not going to this. There's no such thing.
Tech hates me.
Come down here and come into...
Tech just hates me. It's hilarious.
15 times a day, I type the word stop into a text.
Just a little while ago, I had this new account opened up at Seacoast Credit Union for me for something, and
no,
another tech.
Yeah, Richard, okay.
We've never seen that before. I just go, yeah, when it comes to tech, I hear that every day.
All right, you want to look at that again?
Yeah, so what do you want to...
Well, I think is what we need to do is as far as the agenda goes, is kind of write it as it happens, but we need to basically give a brief history on the...
Organization.
Derelict vessel ordinance. And I'm gonna give a round of view that, look, the derelict vessel statute and ordinance is fine.
Lovely and delightful.
Our problem is vessels that are anchored, that are not derelict, that are illegally anchored or not illegally, is our main focus. Specifically, the new ordinance that is the anchoring ordinance in the Ortega River, and then I'll give some examples of where we are on the boat that docked illegally, et cetera, is a mechanism for handling these type situations, and if you would give an overview of where we are with the Wyoming's situation. You may start off with the history of our meeting. Bring us up to that point.
Eric and Peter Short.
I wasn't there last night, but I'm there.
I can forward it to you.
That was the clear pathway, so that they don't have to put up with it.
It's a long one.
It's a good long one. It's a space.
We need to get state attorney's office and the office of general counsel and the legal advisor the sheriff's office too. And Richard Gilmore, lieutenant. It was him that asked. We got another question called.
I think the truth is,
at-risk vessel.
No one really wants to talk about it. That's the fine line. People walk away.
No, that's not fine.
It can be fine.
But not for at-risk.
They're not walking away from the 30s.
At-risk is boats that can't be turned, that are not derelict, that are in the process of getting to that position. They can warn them when they light them, but there has to be a Richard there. Richard.
But we can't.
I was just explaining to him about the at-risk situation. They need to input on that and hit that point. Give each other comfort. Collaborate, compatibility, word to use there, but give us more. Whenever you come up proud when you're saying, I can't believe that's something that you're saying that. But anyway, main thing we're talking about is the anchoring ordinance, of course, but, and that's kind of, although it's all affected by it, but not really yet, because we're not doing any enforcement on that yet. We're going to go over that, but we're also going to go over the need for enforcement of at-risk vessels. And then we're going to talk about a mechanism for, I don't think you're going to get away with that. Come on up here and sit with us.
You always have care.
Sit the best you can. Sit corner-wise.
You're just well-equipped.
There's somebody sitting here now.
You. And matter of fact, I think he's moved me over here, so you sit here.
Okay.
But anyway, that's what we're going to talk about.
Okay. Right on.
We're going to write it from there. Is that okay?
Yes, sir.
Perfect.
And then we should have police legal advisor here and also state attorney's office and the office of general counsel.
Mm-hmm. What about FWC? Let's go
on.
Yeah, I was the one called you earlier.
Okay.
Left you a message.
Did you?
Yeah.
Am I say so?
I think so, yeah.
Sorry. Today's my day off, so
I wasn't sure if you were coming to this. I'm trying to get some. I got thrust last night.
That way of original.
Yeah, because I first read it and now it through. I was like, oh, this isn't real.
My day off, I got to call about 2 hours
of the new ordinance meeting. Being able to do something with vessels that are more table anchoring zones, mm-hmm. and also vessels that are like they're docking that we can't remove because we don't have a mechanism.
No, I was just
moving. But
I didn't see any part confusing
like we've done. Derelict vessel program and the derelict vessel funding.
It is
working, and it, although it's not working as fast as we would like.
Isn't it faster now this
Tallahassee
year?
Has slowed it down.
Dang. I was hoping it would be faster.
It was. It was moving along really good, but we've got some that have been sitting in their purview for 6 months.
Ended up on somebody's dock.
So if it's a plain, simple case where derelict vessel comes to you, we put an application in, and it's fast because they get it back in 2 weeks. And then you go to
our process is slower too.
Their process is just slow on the procurement side.
Oh, okay.
So, and they've slowed it down even more because now they don't allow the captain here to make, or any captain to make the call or write the letter.
Oh.
They're reviewing the letters and reviewing the case out of Tallahassee now, and then it goes out.
Oh, so that would slow down no matter which way they do it.
So that's where we are with that.
Okay.
And the other thing they're going to talk about, what somebody's going to bring up, is the funding that was allowed, that it was allocated for the
floating
structures. And this misconception that, and I don't know if it's a misconception, but it's something that can be, that those funds are for just floating structure, or those for the derelict program, or those that we use for getting a contractor to be able to those vessels and get a marina to, I don't know that answer. That's kind of why I asked.
$200,000
will go
quick.
Huh?
So that $200,000 will go quick. Yeah, right now it just says the ordinance.
Yeah, you know where that little park is right next to the bridge?
Yeah, I don't even know where
the
money is. It was parked
out
like
a little. See, that's
the
dock.
That
was
which one?
The back end.
What was the question?
Oh, no, it's not something you'll know. It's probably
like a 40 foot.
Yeah, it's probably every time I asked where the funding is for the...
It was
a couple years ago for the...
The guy that was on it
floating structure
was living on it.
Nobody ever knows where it's at. You know who
with all the other boats
had identified
it. He ended up tying it off to another...
She's the one who got the legislation.
She had identified
it. Then it went over to parks.
It went to parks, and then it moved over to neighborhoods, and when it moved over to neighborhoods, and nobody can find it. And I forwarded them the information
Thank
I had
for
in the
out.
Parks.
No problem.
She said, okay, okay,
we're
going to
feed away
to this account.
Big, nice boats down there. So we had to go down. And the current was bad. The wind was bad. Cut it loose, and then at that point in time, we took it up.
None of the money should be gone. As far as I know, nothing's been spent.
Are you up here?
How do we?
I don't know. You also have. She's going to be a little late. Is
still
Brandon. But I can.
Yeah,
because
she's such
a Jason over there, he wanted to end up dislocating both of his shoulders.
I think they've got Jason's.
I also don't know if it was an all year.
Yeah,
we all, the guy ended up going
Aaron's
back out.
We needed to ask for it every year, and we haven't.
I'm fine over there. So Aaron does enforcement. She's under Gappy.
So it got tied up.
It would be nice if you're going to do this.
Yeah.
Somehow. This is going to be funded by this.
So if we wound up with, I'm really good at identifying where the problems are, but as far as solving the problems.
You got to do it up here with your hands.
Okay, that's fine.
It's your waterways.
Person. I don't mind seeing, we're pals. I guess I'm right here on the corner.
Okay.
Are you
going to move Jason from there?
He might lie. We'll see when I get in. That's all right.
How you doing, sir?
Well, how are you?
Doing super.
That's John
Galanowski.
Nice to meet you.
Okay. Hi. Good to see you.
There it
is. And I'll probably sit here, because I'm just in the back. Aaron, they actually made you a fan.
Oh, my gosh. I was going to go and sit in the audience.
John.
We get to sit next to each other.
Like the good old days. Hi, how are you guys?
You're good. How are you?
Hi, I'm Aaron Mason. Very nice to meet you.
Kevin Kilpoint.
A place to take vessels before they become sunken vessels.
Aaron Mason.
And a process for moving them from point A to point B.
Yeah.
How are you?
If they'll do it. What we'll do is put out a
Happy Valentine's
Day. Either RFP or put both of them on one or two. But Wellington wants to tow too. They want to go tow. So we put our RFP out for tows, and we can add, like JSO does, a series of them at the top of the list, and whichever one's next. All that is in the weeds that we need to figure out later, but getting the funding and getting the process of getting the in place.
When you go to Vegas, usually infrastructure that is right next to Aria.
Yeah, it is.
Between Aria and Circle and B, you don't have to ask the question from there or whatever again. It's the way it's done. Don't mess with it.
It's like a whole thing.
People are here. Hello, sir.
You backed up like I was coming
out. No, I was bringing you in there.
Good.
Good
afternoon.
Yeah, it is afternoon. Did you enjoy it?
They are always going to be available.
Jamie.
Okay.
You know
No, but
he looks like he's going to have any objection to is that they don't have a...
Lieutenant? Yes.
We know there's a...
Place to take them to.
Hi. First, I don't know.
I'm Soraya.
Hey, Soraya.
From the north side of the city and one to the south side of the city.
Nice. Not the river keeper. Why are you all the way back here?
To do it. If we only have one that's willing to take them all over the county. That would be the area.
Doing good. How are you?
I was here until midnight last night.
Oh.
That was fun.
I just love this place.
I do. I love it so, so much. I love talking about Chick-fil-A. Constitutional offices and all of this.
Yeah, it was between our seats. How are you, sir? Good to see you.
There's Bedland. There's no markers at Nice, I mean, St. Leon's.
Yeah, we went back out. Good to see you.
We got thought. Some mark? They are not on. You're on? Who's on? Oh, hello, hello. I don't have a light.
You just don't have
someone,
the cable.
You're not going to sit next to me? All right, good deal. Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting to order. We're just going to go in order, starting from Brian. I'm just going to go right around the room. Go ahead, sir.
Brian Burkett, City of Jacksonville's waterfront project manager for the Parks Department.
Rick Hartley, Waterways Commission.
Kevin Kilcoyne, I'm a sergeant with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office Marine Unit.
Nice.
Lieutenant Gilmore, FWC.
Jason Teal, Office of General Counsel.
Aaron Mason, Office of General Counsel.
John Kalinowski, State Attorney's Office.
Shannon McGillis, Office of General Counsel.
Jimmy Peluso, City Council District 7 and Chair of Waterways.
Mike Barker, Waterways and running our task force.
Jim Super, Waterways Coordinator, Doc Master, City of Jacksonville.
Melissa Long, EQD, Environmental Quality Division.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank everyone for being here today. We're here for a very important reason. There's a damn boat in Ortega that just won't go away. And that alone is the reason we're here. I'm getting too many calls, and I'm glad that we've got so many people to show up for it. Obviously, this is more than just this one vessel. I used to work at the Water Management District. I was a part of the EOC at the state during several hurricanes, including Hurricane Matthew. And derelict vessels was a major issue. And we would have FWC next to us and find, and we would have, you know, the local sheriff's office, and we'd say, who's going to move them? You going to move them? Where are you going to put them? And, you know, meanwhile, these vessels are all over the place. So it's a real pain. It requires a lot of folks working together to make sure that we kind of figure this out. So I'm gonna pass it off to you, Captain Suber. If you can kind of tell us what we currently have on the books and how we make it a little bit better, perhaps.
Yeah, sure. We currently have a derelict vessel, state statutes as well as city ordinances that cover what we do on boats that become derelict, that is in the system now. FWC manages it, controls it. They also have a at-risk state statute that covers vessels that are in the planning stages of becoming a derelict vessel, for lack of a better word. There's some procedures that are has got some hiccups in that particular procedure, and FWC also has what they call a VTIP program, that if a vessel is at the point of it can't be recovered or become a better vessel and the owner of it is up to its wits on being able to figure out what to do with it, FWC will actually take the vessel and dispose of the vessel at no cost to the owner. So those programs are working really well. It's where our hiccups are at-risk vessels, vessels that are illegally anchored or illegally docked at a facility that they're not supposed to be at or in violation of our docking ordinances. We have no way to remove them. We have no place to remove them to. That's one of the age-old problems we've been working with for several years, all the way back when I was in the Marine unit with the Sheriff's Office. So those are the biggest issues, and also the procedure that we're trying to come up with. We've just had a new city ordinance that was approved by the state legislature for a anchoring zone actually probably two anchoring zones, four anchoring zones in the Ortega River system. We've got it signed. It's posted well. Ordinance is in place. The problems that we have with it is that there's some loopholes, for lack of a better word, to where boaters can get around not having to abide by the ordinance. And the other thing is that it's hard, if not impossible, for law enforcement to actually prove and make a case. Reasonable suspicion is a bit different word than probable cause, and the probable cause is the problem that we have with that, because you have to do too many things. One of the part of that ordinance and that state, the state legislature gave us, was that it, uses GPS as a means of evidence, but yet the GPS doesn't say that it has to be a fixed mount GPS. And we had a meeting with JSO and with the Wyman Duggan, with the state legislator that filed the new law and the new rule, and he was going back to Tallahassee, and I guess that is in a pending status as to in the system to be cleaned up, and that's something that I'm not sure we can do anything until he is successful in that cleanup process. So I guess the biggest issue on today's table, and Mr. Barker can correct me if I'm wrong, but is we don't want to, the derelict vessel program is a system that's not broken. It's a procedure, and it's a long procedure, and it the only thing that we can clean up there is to speed up the procedure, but it's outside of the city's hands on the procedure, unless it's one that, there's two different programs that FWC works from. One is that they will, once they determine, or law enforcement determines that a vessel is derelict, they can send a letter to us, which would be Environmental Quality Division with Chief Long, and then she would do an application for a grant, and that grant would be approved through FWC's Boating and Waterways section in Tallahassee. That process is about a two-week-long process that is pretty, they fine-tuned it to where it's pretty quick. The only thing that is slow is that getting that letter is, the law enforcement officer has to do due diligence, and then after the due diligence and they actually find an owner, they have to give notice to the owner and post the vessel for 21 days. And at the end of that 21 days, counting the days off of an officer being off on regular leave or annual leave or sick leave or whatever the case may be, the timing and everything may take a little more than 21 days. But then once that is in the system as in the process of needing to be moved, it has to go a report from the officer to the lieutenant, to the captain, and if the captain approves it, it has to go all the way back to Tallahassee for it to be reviewed by a support staff, a lieutenant, a captain, and back to the support staff, and then the letter will be approved to go out, and then it goes back through that channel to the officer to send a letter. Time-consuming, but there's a lot of checks that have to be checked off and approved because it is someone's property, so a lot of understanding in that. Once all that's done, then it has to go through an RFP process for removal to get a contractor to actually remove it. So it's kind of a long process.
So when you say posted, what does that mean?
Posted is they've got stickers that they stick on the actual vessel, okay. 21 days. Then there's other issues, like we got a couple now that are working that the owner has passed away and there's no next of kin to be known. So new letters and new notices and publications have to go out for, is it four or 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And so there's a lot of tentacles to it, but it is a process.
So we're looking at 5 to 7 weeks?
We're probably looking at more like 3 to 4 months.
If everything is streamlined and the process works efficiently without problems, I think we've got it to where somewhere around 60 days, but that's very rare.
Well, who says government is slow? Interesting.
We've got a couple other challenges on top of that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean,
let's hear them.
Honestly, we've got... we've got a great group of people here, and just to sort of very briefly background it, I mean, this has been a 15-year-long project of mine. What we're dealing with primarily are not boaters in the sense that they're boaters who are what I would call engaged. We've got people who are using the river, Ortega in particular, but other parts too, as a storage lot. They're not navigating. And it took a long time to get Boat US to kind of recognize the difference and actually start supporting us in this regard. And then that's what finally ultimately made it possible to get the state legislation passed. And so what we have to recognize in this situation is that we're typically not dealing with a boat owner that cares. They've got it. I've even had people, as I live on the Ortega River, I've even had people come up to me and say, yeah, I just got this from freeboat.com, which is a website you can log on to, and just they'll tell you where to go pick up the boat for free. And they're always a disaster area. I've seen a couple of them get pulled in, and 12 hours later, they're on the bottom. So you're kind of more dealing with a hoarding kind of mentality, or a mentality where they're just not engaged enough, where they'll go back up north all summer and just kind of leave the boat sitting here unattended for 4 or 5 months and summer up north and then come back here during the winter.
Are you claiming northerners are to blame?
I'm saying it is part of the problem, yes, sir.
My New Jersey heart is hurting.
So the challenges that creates are, as the captain said, part of this process is they're actually requiring us to actually find the owner and serve the owner. And if they're up north and you've got to get the court system or law enforcement in Connecticut to go out and serve somebody because of a problem boat down in Florida, yeah, that's real high priority. Sure, we'll get on that right away. We really do need to get a system where what we can do is clean this thing up and make it so that law enforcement can get out there and do what they can do legally, and also not face some of the ridiculousness that I understand happened on this latest boat, which is not the boat from 6 months ago. This is a different boat.
Okay.
So, and
there was one before that, and there was one before that.
Yeah.
That's an age-old problem there for some reason. But what he's saying, the bottom line is that we need a mechanism that handles a illegally docked, illegally anchored, or an at-risk vessel to be taken and placed prior to being able to dispose of it. Because by the time we get to the point of one being able to be disposed of, it adds about $10,000 to $20,000 the cost, because it's now sunk, it's got water in it, yep, et cetera, et cetera. So it's what we need is the at-risk program, and law enforcement can speak more on the issue, but the at-risk is a violation of law, and they can issue notices to appear and citations, but they have to have, and I'll ask the lieutenant to tell what they have to have in order to move to the next step on that. So,
well, real quick, it sounds to me that so we're looking for a tow yard, basically. Is that what we're looking for?
A towing company and a storage yard.
But before that, what we have to do is we have to have a reasonable time frame within which to go ahead and violate the boat and get permission to tow it. Where to tow it, that would probably take us about 3 phone calls, and we would have proposals back like that.
But
who to tow it? 3 phone calls, we'd have them like that. That's not the hard part.
But are we able to get it towed to this potential public tow yard and do it before the 21 day starts and the rest of that process?
You can move a vessel, and it's just like for example, the best example in the world is the sheriff's office and FWC and FHP. They're top-of-the-list program for towing vehicles. They can tow a vehicle in 24 hours.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking.
And it can go some, but they can't destroy it for 60 days. And so there needs to be a process. So if a vessel, even if it's a good boat, but it's decided, for example, this boat that is tied up at Ortega, mm-hmm. started out to be just an anchored boat that was a good boat that was breaking loose, tied to the dock. Then the guy decided that he kind of liked it there, so he didn't move it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem, is that even if you go down to one of our docks downtown and someone goes and they leave it down there because we've got a 72-hour rule down there, but there's somebody that comes in and says, okay, well, we kind of like this. It's free, and we got access to restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. I think we're going to stay a couple of months. Well, we can write, or the sheriff's office and FWC can write citations to them, but they can't. The ordinance allows them to move it and have it towed, but there's no mechanism mm-hmm. for moving it and having it towed and where to take it to. So that's the biggest. And then the other thing is that part, and then the at-risk process. Those two items.
And just to be clear, the anchorages that we've now set up, that's a place where somebody can go anchor out for a longer period of time, correct? Or is there a time frame?
45 days.
All right, so 45 days, yeah. So
which,
and we've got anchor zones that have no time limit.
Okay. Yeah. So that's where someone can publicly enjoy, the use of the public amenities of the river. Mm-hmm. So I understand that. But if they go to a public dock and they're there for, how long is someone allowed to stay at a public dock?
72 hours is most of them.
Okay.
Some 24, but most of them are 72.
All right.
Three days.
But the lack of a mechanism also allowed this fella who you're talking about to actually just be disrespectful and rude to law enforcement when they were just came up and said, look, other people get to use the stock too. And my understanding is that it got interesting. And there was nothing that they could really do about it. That's ridiculous. I mean, at a certain point, that can't be tolerated. There has to be a mechanism that respects.
Go ahead. And we've asked respectfully the Office of General Counsel as well as the State Attorney's Office to come and listen to this issue to get them on the page of, especially the State Attorney's Office, to get things going for we could actually make that decision that it's going to be towed and it's going to be, or it's at risk to the point where that person is going to be actually physically arrested, and the case is actually followed through because, and I don't know if this is to be true or false or what, but if, there are bigger cases in the world, I know, everybody knows that,
sure.
But, we do have a city that has got a lot of crime, and not a lot of crime because we're a great city, but they've got other fish to fry, and we respect that. But unfortunately, this particular issue is being detrimental to our waterway system, and it needs to be worked through the process.
Well, I'm just asking. So for our cars, the tow yards that we have, those are usually private tow yards, right?
Private businesses.
Have you explored, do we have options for whether it be public land that might have an older dock that's not, I don't know. Like what have we explored that could possibly be tow yards for vessels?
I have asked Towboat US and CTOW if they were interested in towing vessels under a contract, and they don't have a problem with the tow part. They'll tow all day long, and they'll charge the money that they are allowed to charge. They don't have any place to tow to.
Okay.
I have talked to originally, Saddler Point, Brooks Busey, he was interested in helping out. He's going to take a yard that has an actual lift that would accommodate a sailboat all the way to a rowboat. Arlington Marina, they said that they were interested in both towing and storage and removal process. They have a lift that they can accommodate that type of vessel. So the answer to your question is, yes, we've asked around, and the opportunities are there. I'm not sure if Saddler has since been sold to Windward, and Windward is a major company that, whether they allow something like that would be a new question.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask our FWC friends. We've obviously got huge boating communities throughout the state. Like, how does Broward County, Palm Beach County, Miami-Dade County kind of operate in these kind of these waters, for lack of a better pun? Somebody laugh.
Unfortunately, I can't answer that because I haven't been down there.
All right.
I know our processes are the same. The battles are the same. We have the same issues, the same problems around the state, whether it's here or down in the Keys. I think from what I've seen and what I do know about is, you know, St. Augustine kind of has mastered the process between having their city docks, their mooring yards, and having the officers patrol that area. But it's a very consolidated area. I mean, we have much more waterways than St. Augustine. Mm-hmm. But they seem to be very proficient with it and their relationship with the city and working between the mooring fields and the city docks. And they have the support of the courts, and whether it's on the misdemeanor side or the infraction side. So.
Okay.
So can I add something?
You may.
St. Augustine has done a really good job, and they have what's called a submerged land lease agreement. So they have a mooring field, and then there's a city employee there, and you call up and say, hey, I want to attach my boat to a mooring field, and then they charge you a fee for staying that night. So if a boater comes up in the middle of the night, doesn't call, he attaches to the mooring buoy, then law enforcement will go over there and charge them with defrauding an innkeeper. They'll actually take a chain and a lock, and they'll go from the mooring ball to the boat, and they'll lock it up so the boat can't be moved. And then they start the process, just like a TOL does for a vehicle. If no one claims it, they'll eventually at some point take over the title. Then they take the boat to a shipyard, they put it up there, and then they'll try and auction it off if there's any value in it. But it's a very good system.
So, and that's local police that are doing that, or is that FWC?
It's not FWC.
Okay. I mean, this is where I just quickly have to ask the question. So, A, how big is our marine unit for JSO? And then B, are they able to do any enforcement on the St. John's River, or is that considered a state river? Or does it have to be only the tributaries? Do we know?
We know.
We can do enforcement on the St. John's River. So we have 8 officers total. We have 4 that work on what's called each color squad, and there's 2 supervisors. But, yeah, we can enforce state statutes on state waters.
Okay. 8 officers? So, I mean, that's a lot of land you guys have to cover, I assume.
Yeah, 75 square miles, all of Duval County. So it goes all the way from basically Clay County all the way out to the ocean, south of the intercoastal, all the way to Palm Valley, and then goes back up north.
None of the beaches have their own marine unit?
Atlantic Beach has a small John boat, but I would say no.
All right. So 8 officers and 1 John boat from Atlantic Beach. All right.
But you're also talking about 2 different priority enforcements.
Sure.
Between this, like, we can enforce the county ordinances, but it's not something that we go out and look for every day. Just like they don't go out and look at the state statutes every day. So it's that mutual relationship that works well together.
I'm just looking at capacity.
Yeah, write at risk tickets. And we don't do any derelict investigations, but we write at risk tickets and slow speed zone tickets, manatee zone tickets, just like they do.
Let me put it this way. If I heard that St. Augustine had 8 officers, I'd be like, that makes sense. But for 8 officers for all of Duval County, seems like a behemoth amount of work.
Their area is very tightly contained relative to us, number one. And number two, their mooring field is an area that is pretty much oriented towards the commercial and tourism district right there.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a...
places.
Yeah, we do have a little bit of a difference in Jacksonville in that the prime, you know, areas where people are leaving their boats, they're typically in neighborhoods or right up against neighborhood docks and so forth. And so the kind of the idea of the mooring field didn't really translate well before, but that's why the anchorage zones.
That too.
Please.
The difference in St. Augustine and Jacksonville, St. Augustine goes all the way back where the city of St. Augustine owns their submerged lands. It's not a submerged land lease. We tried to get mooring fields in the Ortega River, and because of the fact that we didn't have the riparian rights to that area, we would have to get them from the residents, and the residents, we wouldn't even ask them to give up their riparian rights. And so once we had a grant, Florida Inland Navigation grant, that we would go, we put a, originally there wasn't even a channel in the Ortega River. And so we put in a channel, we made it a wide channel because of the size boats that go in and out of there. And then we had three pods that we were going to put mooring fields in there. And FWC was all in favor of it, but DEP, who manages the submerged land lease piece of that, they wouldn't give the submerged land lease for them because of our riparian right issue. We didn't have the upland space to cover that. So that's why we couldn't actually put mooring fields in. They are absolutely correct about St. Augustine has a great system for even that we could do the same thing, is that a system for when you have a violation, what do you do with it and where do you take it and what do you, how do you dispose of it? It's the same process. It's just that we would have to figure out, instead of taking them from a mooring field or locking them up to a mooring field, mooring ball, we would have to figure out where we would take them pending the disposal of the case. Because one man's trash is another man's treasure, and if we destroy a $1,200 boat, all of a sudden, once we destroy it, it becomes a multi-million dollar yacht. And so you just can't do that. It's peaceful, personal property of people. So that's why the procedure is so valuable and so important.
So what's happening right now in Tallahassee? What's the law that we're kind of hoping will get made?
Well, the addition was, we went back 2 years ago, 3 years ago. This has been about a 5-year process to get this passed. But we went back and got permission, basically permission from the state to be able to have county enforce. But we'd had an issue with county not being able to enforce or not being quite well. It wasn't quite that clean, but the state had said, we're going to control what goes on in our waters. Anything that happens on our waters, refer it to us first. Mm-hmm. Well, you got 900 people, not even 900 of you guys, that cover the entire state and its offshore waters for hunting, fishing, offshore, all of it. And it's just impossible. There is absolutely no way that 900 people can cover Florida in its entirety. And this mission probably doesn't take as much priority as some of the other missions that they have to do, safety and all of that. So that was the big problem. Now what we've done is we've asked Wyman to go back and clean up the GPS.
And well, there was a whole list that JSO, we met with JSO administration and sergeant there, and they came back with a list that they gave the representative for him to go back to Tallahassee and clean up the bill. And that's what he took back, and he's been coordinating with him on that. But that's where it is right now, on cleaning it up to the point where law enforcement can actually take it to the state attorney's office, and the state attorney's office can ask the right questions and get the right answers to file the actual case against the individual that is in that, at the point of enforcement. And it's a multi-tiered state. It's a 45 days, and then after 45 days, it goes to the next phase of 45 more days, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a process.
It's 3 45-day periods.
Yeah, before it actually is authorized to be able to be towed away or removed, which is fine because it gives everybody a chance as much as you can. And that's not the problem with them. The problem was proving that they hadn't left in 45 days.
So
that's the biggest thing. Yeah.
So Wyman went back to get some clarification so that you can't have somebody with a handheld GPS go see I move, and what they did was stuck in their pocket, drive 8 miles away, go click, and then you don't know. So the only way you can use GPS is if it's permanently attached to the vessel. So that was the big part of what was going to make it much cleaner for law enforcement to be able to go, you didn't go. And then you can start the process. So we need to clean up.
The other part was that in the ordinance or in the state statute that was the ordinance was built off of, it said that the boat owner had to prove his innocence instead of the state attorneys or the police officer proving guilt. And as anybody in the state attorney's office, that don't go over real well because you're innocent until proven guilty. And so they were going back to kind of clean that part up too, if, or either have a good explanation of how that can work legally without getting the, getting it hung up in court.
I can go down a rabbit hole on that. Yeah. But I and so I just, so right now we've seen fixes at the state level in terms of how we do prosecution, it seems, right? But now what are we talking about for waterways and for what the city of Jacksonville can do? Are we basically talking about, hey, let's find a place to tow these vessels, get a towing company, get a contract, get a funding source or appropriation request? Yeah, I mean, actually to that end, right, how does one fund? Do we... I don't know, right? I mean, I assume that there are licenses and fees and things like that for vessels.
Some questions to answer. Yeah. The funding is part of it. The towing issue is part of it. And then I think we've got a little bit better clarity on how to actually violate the boat, so I think we're okay there. And then where do you tow it to? And
but the violating quicker than the...
If we can get more to a model that, you know... If you've got a system where it's a $50 fine after 45 days and then it's, what, a $200 fine after the additional 45 days, or 250, something like that, and then at the end of the third 45-day period, then, okay, you're out. At this point, that system's not working well because, number one, a lot of times these time clocks weren't starting until they actually located the vessel owner and could prove that they delivered notice that they're in violation, which isn't going to work. I mean, because most of these, a lot of these people are not only out of town, but they're out of state. And we're just not getting cooperation from, you know, Connecticut, California, overseas, wherever they are.
Arlington.
Okay.
So at what point do we deem it an at-risk vessel? So, like, if it's just floating out there, I go out in the morning with my morning call.
It's covered under state statute.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering, like, at what point do we see a vessel? Okay, there's a vessel just sitting out there. I'm standing at my dock with my coffee in the morning. 4 days later, I go out there. It's still just kind of floating in the middle of the tributary or the river or whatever else. When is it deemed an at-risk
vessel?
There are
six criteria for it to meet the definition of at-risk.
Okay.
The first one is the vessel's taking on water without effective means to dewater itself.
Sure.
I.e. bilge pumps aren't working. Yep. Spaces on the boat that are meant to be open or closed are open. So, for instance, a sailboat has the hatch open, so when it rains, water gets in. So it kind of goes back to the deep water. But if it's meant to be secure and it's left open, allowing water to come in, that's at risk. If it breaks loose of anchor or is at risk of breaking loose of anchor. So breaking loose, actual breaking and floating down the river, or we go out and inspect the line, it's dry rotted frayed, and it looks like it's going to break loose any moment now, or it drags anchor. So they don't have the appropriate sized anchor for the boat, or they're in Ortega where it's 6 feet of sludge, and with any type of wind, it drifts. The vessel is listing, so once again, it's another water thing. So the boat's kind of catty-corner wonkus from the water buildup inside. It doesn't have an effective means of propulsion. So with that, effective means of propulsion is it doesn't have a motor or it doesn't have a sail to get underway within 72 hours.
I know,
so
my rules of the road, all right?
We have a test now that we go out and we give them notice. We set a date that we're going to conduct an effective means of propulsion test. We use buoys and a rangefinder to course the setup, and they have to rig their sail or start their motor, and they have a timeline that they have to perform that maneuver. If they fail to show up, that's automatically they fail. So that's kind of the biggest one. And then tied to an unlawful structure. So basically they're tied up to a slow speed sign, or they throw an engine block or a bag of concrete out. Anything that's basically not an anchor.
The West Side Way.
Right. So if it meets any of those categories, it's considered at risk.
Understood. Okay. Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense to me. I'm just asking for edification purposes. Go ahead.
One thing to remember, too, is let's not mix our problems here. One is anchorage. You know, I don't care if it's the slickest boat on the planet. Mm-hmm. It comes in for 45 days. You're not going to store it there all year. So it could be perfectly fine, but it's just in violation of the anchorage thing. Secondarily, is at risk and derelict. And so we're kind of jumping back and forth between the two. Mm-hmm. The at-risk stuff, I think we've got a lot more tools to work with, and I think we've got a lot more clarity on that. It's the anchorage that's tough, because that's where you got to document how long.
And illegally, there's actually four. There's at-risk, that's the four, the anchoring zone ordinance, illegally docked, and then the worst-case scenario is one turned derelict. And like I've said, the derelict issue is what it is, and it's a process we don't even need to reinvent, because we're not going to be able to reinvent it, because that's a state issue that they've got it in place, and it works through FWC. So our biggest issue right now is being able to successfully do at-risk program, successfully do the anchoring program, and successfully do the illegally docked or moored issue, those three issues there.
So do we need to make changes in our ordinance to reflect that?
We don't need to make ordinance change on the docking. We don't need to make ordinance change on, and Lieutenant Sergeant, y'all correct me if I'm wrong here, but the at-risk is, it's just a matter of not changing it, but actually understanding the system to make, because they have to have a, in this part you explained, they got to have a disposition. It's got to be a withhold adjudication, or there has to be a guilty. It can't be just we dropped it because we don't want to mess with it type stuff. Right.
So at that risk, when we write the at risk, so when we go out and we conduct an inspection, we attempt to write everything that we can find to make the boat at risk. So if it's listing, it's got open hatches, it drug anchor, we write everything. And the reason that we do that is if we can get three convictions within a 12-month time frame, then we can move on to the public nuisance law, which allows us to remove the vessel as a public nuisance, much like a derelict vessel. But it has to be three convictions for the same thing. So like the boat at Simpson Park, where it's drug anchored three times and played bumper boats. The problem that we're having is even though those are they're infractions, and every time you write it, it's a step up, right? I think it's 150, 200. We're going back into court, and we're seeing that it's just getting dropped. So that was something that I had spoke with Jim about, that we were going to go up and talk with the clerk of courts, because I've never seen infractions get dropped before, but we've seen a historical routine with that happening. But it's important that we get those three convictions, you know, as long as it's some type of guilty, in order to move on to that public nuisance.
So could that individual have been towed after 72 hours of being at that public dock?
Yes. Under our city ordinance, they could have been removed to a secure location if we had one.
Under real certain, like let's say that person was there and just said, hey, I'm having boat trouble, I can't move this thing. Like we clearly wouldn't have said, you know, tough.
Yeah, 72 hours. Yeah.
That's what the 72-hour effective means. We offer them a timeline if it is a situation where they're doing boat repairs to get, you know, a replacement part, get it fixed, and then get it moved.
But with the car example on the side of the road, you know, yeah, there's a safety issue. You don't want somebody slamming into something on the side of the road. But secondarily, you know, you can take those cars to a safer location where they also are not going to be vandalized, destroyed, whatever. And, you know, the marine environment's a lot less forgiving than the state highway.
No question.
And so you got a much more complex thing that's kind of sitting there already falling apart, and we're just going to let it sit there for month after month after month while we're piddling around trying to find some guy, you know, in a different state, whatever. We're just ditching you.
So I'm just going to ask, where do we see most of our problem children? You know, obviously this one incident is in Ortega that I started off with. But are we seeing a lot of stuff in Ortega or Arlington?
Yeah, I mean, I just happen to live in... Yeah, I mean, I just happen to live in, you know, the center of it, but Julington. But Ortega is tough because just a couple weeks ago, we just had a little blow, nothing big. I mean, we're not even in storm season right now, and a boat broke loose and went crashing into Port 32. There's a couple hundred million dollars worth of boats along that stretch of the river right there, and you got these guys who are bringing junk in, and they're just blowing through and crashing into boats that are tied into the marinas that are there and my dock numerous times.
And that happens also with Exchange Island. We just had one this week that broke loose, and luckily it went on the mud flat before it hit the bridge. But we've had a lot of them hit the Matthews Bridge, and law enforcement has to go out there and figure out some way to secure them. So they secure them to the safest place they can get it to, which is a lot of time is Arlington boat ramp, or either the dock at the Intercoast or at the Exchange Island, which neither one of them is makes anybody happy, but it's they have to do something, and that's all they have left to do right now. Rather, they could have, if that one of those vessels like that, they could have called, if we had a proper procedure, could have called the whoever was on the list next to tow. Okay, tow it, and here's the next one, or here's the facility that is waiting for it, et cetera, and have a procedure like that, no matter what it is. Even if it's someone that goes down to the downtown docks and they, you know, decide that they're going to leave it there for a few days because they got too intoxicated, and 72 hours goes away, and they're still there, and nobody's moving it, then sheriff's office can come and write citations on it, tow it, take it to the facility, and then whoever owns that boat can go to the facility, pay for it to get it back, have the facility pay, or pay the facility to put it back in the water for them, and then have that procedure in place, kind of like a car.
So you're telling me people drink on boats?
That's why they left it there, so they wouldn't drink on the boat.
But it's not legal if you're the captain.
Right.
So drink all you want, but there should be a designated captain.
Of course.
You know, the other thing, like you were saying, though, is that you do get into a situation where it takes so long to get any of this done. These things hit the bottom before we have a chance to get to them. So what we really need to do is we really need to get this process streamlined as much as we possibly can, respecting people's rights, you know, property rights, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we do need to get this process cleaned up. It's just right now it's a mess.
Well, we keep talking about getting this process cleaned up, but it sounds like what we need is an appropriation request to either to get a towing company and to get an area to tow it to, right? That's really seems to be the dilemma, correct?
And it would be good to have the ordinances cleaned up to where they're standardized in one little good clean package rather than in different levels.
That's what we need you also with the legal side is that we need to respect their personal property rights on the one hand, but on the automotive side, you don't have to notice the owner of the vehicle to remove the vehicle to a different location. And in this case, that's been one of the big hang-ups that we've had, is that we've been stopped waiting for some other jurisdiction to notice somebody, a boat owner, for Duval County. And, you know, most of them try and cooperate, but, you know, you start getting into Wyoming. There's one guy in, like, Wyoming, I think, they could never find. So it just sits there month after month after month. So if we can come up with a...
And the procedure needs to have a notice period. I mean, whether it's 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, whatever from a legal perspective seems to be the right thing to do. That's what we should do because we need to give everybody as much of a benefit, but not to the point where, like, for example, a $50 fine for 45 more days of being on the waterway, well, compared to $50-something dollars a day to take it to a marina, that's a small price to pay. They're willing to jump on that all day long.
Well, so, and the other difference is...
Go ahead, Shannon.
For clarification, so when we kind of took derelict and put it to the side because that process is...
Yeah, don't muddy it up, yeah.
Okay, pun intended. So...
Nope, yeah.
Looking at risk, separate from Anchorage, illegal docking, illegal mooring. So when you talk about at-risk, you say that there's no mechanism in the code. Is the same issue no mechanism on Anchorage or no?
Same. No, there's no procedure for illegally being at risk or illegally anchored or docked or moored or any word you want to use, all three of them. There's nothing that once that's been determined that it's a public nuisance, even if it's been determined as a public nuisance, we still don't have a place and a procedure to take it and remove it to.
Okay, so that's what I want to, so we're talking about for the at-risk, after you've had the three convictions, after it's a public nuisance, that's where you have a no mechanism in the code for the physical taking.
We have no mechanism in the code if it's been in a place, like, for example, the best example in the world is Stinson Park, Ortega River. It don't matter if it's a rowboat that has been there more than 10 minutes, it's illegally docked. If it's a boat that was there now, it was a cabin cruiser, shouldn't have been there 30 seconds because it's a kayak launch only. And so if it's there, it's in violation. So once it is determined that it's somewhere it can't be, because as long as that's there, the rightful intended users can't use it. So you're depriving the rightful users the opportunity to use that facility as long as that piece that is there. Whether it's a brand new boat or a 42-year-old clunker, doesn't matter what it is, it's in violation.
Okay, so we're for both at-risk and anchorage issues.
And docking.
Anchorage, I'm going to say anchorage, docking, mooring.
Okay.
At-risk and anchorage, docking, mooring, we have the mechanisms for saying you're not supposed to be here. We're now talking about now what do we do? What are the mechanisms for the physical taking, notice, just like towing a car.
Right.
But then separate and apart from that is the issue of now who's going to do it with what funds?
Right. Okay. All that in place. And we have an ordinance. 615 is covers that what law enforcement to include FWC can actually remove a vessel. It's just they don't have any mechanism to do it if they were, you know, if they had the opportunity, they have a mechanism.
They have the authority, but not the procedure.
Right.
Okay. Right. All right. So I'm just trying to, what are we actually talking about? So we have authority, we have the checklist in the code, the six different things, how you get there on some of this, but then what? So it's a procedure. Okay.
Right. The other thing to kind of keep in mind is we kind of have two different mindsets. The Anchorage folks, when you're writing law, the Anchorage folks have been more assumed to be engaged with their boat, so they'll know where it is, they know what condition it's in, they visit it all the time, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We're actually finding that in the Ortega not to be the case. And then the other boats, the ones where there's actually somebody on it, they're docked illegally, whatever, that's more of an immediate situation, and I think it deserves a more of an immediate response. You can't have a guy pull up a boat to Simpson Park and then just basically tell LEO to go. That's just not, we just can't do that.
And we've had a lot of them at the boat ramps themselves that they when they dock there, the boat ramp is out of service. It can't be utilized. We've had that in Arlington boat ramp. Sergeant put numerous, I don't know how many, I can't even count how many times. We just had a sunk one that sunk right at the boat ramp at Mandarin Park, Stinson Park dock. So it's not an isolated one part of the river. It happens at any of them. We got one that sunk at a T.K. Stokes boat ramp right now. Luckily, it's off to the side, so it's still operational, but it's a derelict, so it's going through the process. So it's not isolated to a specific territory. Like the anchoring ordinance only applies to the Ortega River area. We can't use that ordinance behind Exchange Island. We can't use it on Julington Creek, Trout River, all of our other anchorage issue areas, because it was started off to be in the Ortega River, and it's kind of like it's not a pilot program, but it kind of is a pilot program that if it works and we can get all the bugs out of it, then we can extend that to other parts of the county to make that ordinance effective other places, as I understand it. Is that right, Ryan?
So,
go ahead.
Do you want or do you not want to talk about the boat hand-in program that we discussed, where they can voluntarily, if they just have got this boat, they don't have anything to do with it, and they stuck it in the river, and they're some kind of frozen. Do you want to
present that as a possible resolution.
The VTIP program?
Where they voluntarily surrender the vote.
Yeah, but that, we don't want that in our ordinances because that's a state program that is very effective. And it's always, and they advertise it. We put that at every boat show, everywhere that we can advertise that. But that's the vessel turn-in program that FWC and the state, and they've got a large sum of money earmarked through the state and the state statute and everything, where if a person just don't want their boat anymore, they can't handle their boat anymore, that boat is becoming a nuisance. It has to, it can't be determined derelict. It's no longer eligible. But if, and it has to be classified at risk for it to be eligible. But when it hits that point, all they have to do is hand the title to the state, and they'll come, tow it away, take it to wherever they have to take it to, destroy it, remove it, and remove it from the state system as like it never even happened. Great program.
So when this, so when you do this,
we don't want to get
part of, no, which is part of this process. Mm-hmm. So LEO can present that at their, at their level, at their contact level, LEO can present it as an option.
Absolutely.
Okay. And we did, every time we identify a at-risk vessel, that is something that we present to the vessel owner at that point in time.
Right.
Because, I mean, there's a lot of guys out there where, you know, owning a boat sounds great, living on a boat. It doesn't sound great, but whatever.
I was in the Navy, I understand
more,
that.
They bit off a little more than they could shoot.
Until they write,
you know,
their
so
first
say,
day.
Hey,
yeah.
You know, we understand you can't get this boat back up to where it needs to be. Instead of me coming out here and charging you, and then it becoming derelict, and then you paying $10,000, $25,000 to remove it, you can, you have the option to turn this in free of charge with no consequence.
All right, so because we're starting to run down on time, there's a couple questions that I just need answered so that I kind of know how to proceed moving forward. First off, Mr. Teal, have you heard anything yet that's perked your interest during any of this about constitutional issues?
Yeah, so the issue, I think, from my perspective is, what jurisdiction does the city have over these waterways? You know, we can enact ordinances over properties that the city has jurisdiction over, and I get it that JSO and FWC have been empowered to enforce state law in our local waterways, but I know that we've run into some issues over the years in terms of, like, does our zoning code apply in the waterways, those kinds of things. So that's going to have to be a threshold question of a jurisdictional issue, is that we can pass a law, but if we can't enforce it where we want to enforce it, then that's going to be a problem. So I don't know if Susan's done any research on that or if anybody's done any research in terms of the ability for local governments to enact local ordinances that can be used for state and federal waterways. Jim, you know?
Yeah, that's why that ordinance is in place in the Ortega River.
Okay.
The state has to authorize, as far as anchoring laws, most of this problems that we have that the city has is the properties that we have, our boat ramps, our facilities that we have permits through the state or either submerged land leases through the state, that is already on the books for enforcement that we can do. But the state can, and the sheriff's office can enforce any state violation on the waterways of the state of Florida, no matter if it's on the...
Yeah, no, so Jim, I was equating it to towing cars, right?
Right.
So the reason why we can tow cars is because we have an ordinance that says we can tow cars. But we have jurisdiction over those roadways where we can tow those cars. I don't know that we have that same jurisdiction to tow a vessel if it is anchored in the middle of a state waterway or a federal waterway. You know, so that's the real kind of threshold question for me, is I don't want to get everybody's hopes up and say, hey, if we can get 10 votes on city council that gives us the authority to tow these vessels, and then all of a sudden somebody's like, you don't have jurisdiction over me with your local law, you know, then that's, I think, the first question we need to answer. Because otherwise we're stuck with what laws can we enforce, and then making sure that we have the appropriate tools to be as streamlined, efficient, effective, both, you know, monetarily and logistically, to be able to, you know, kind of do that. Kind of perked my ears up a little bit, you know, but then squashed it a little bit with St. Augustine, because then you find out they actually own the land. So
that gives them the right, right? It's because they own the land or they have a sovereign submerged land lease. If we don't have, as a city, don't have those kinds of rights, then it's hard for us to enforce. So that, I think, is the threshold question, is we got to figure that piece of it out, because then it'll guide us going forward to either look at the state level for changing some things or look at a local level of saying, hey, we have these state powers, but we can't pull it off here because we don't have a tow yard or we don't have a contract or we don't have the money to do it. So that's kind of really the thing, I think. You know, we can handle the due process stuff. We can handle the constitutional stuff about giving people proper notice, all of that stuff. We just have to have a, you know, be able to play in that sandbox.
Susan, didn't we handle that with Wyman's? I thought that was the whole purpose.
Just in the Ortega River.
Well,
okay.
Just to answer your question, Susan Green and also General Counsel. Because the state statute said we could do it, I mean, they specifically gave local governments the authority to do the anchoring limitation laws, which is what we did in Ortega River.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that we have jurisdiction to enforce the non-criminal infractions. But, I mean, I could look that up or somebody can look that up to make sure. I was just looking at Chapter 327 in the state statute to kind of look at it. I'm pretty sure it says law enforcement officer, which would include JSO.
To do non-criminal?
Right.
Can do non-criminal local laws?
I mean, these guys probably know more than we do, huh?
Non-criminal local laws? So in other words, can JSL enforce our zoning code in the middle of the St. John's River?
Actually, wouldn't the illegal structures, floating structures, kind of
is in the river
under that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, floating structures.
Yeah, that was the debate.
So actually, they do.
You know, that was, I don't know if we ever landed that plan.
I think we did, because we have an ordinance to that. So I know I must have looked it up. And other jurisdictions do enforce zoning in their waterways.
Okay.
So they must have some.
Yeah, I think that was where, your question is a great question, and I think that's where we actually started 5 years ago and went to the state in order to get the authority to be able to do this. And then we went to the local ordinance level.
Yeah.
And now where we are is let's put the process behind the local ordinance and let's clean up the infraction side of it and let's get it going.
And the reason that happened, we had a situation in Ortega River before this ordinance. Matter of fact, Richard was a fresh new officer, and that was probably one of his first ones. It was a boat that we considered a boat, and we still consider a boat, but the officer, general counsel, and FWC decided that it was a floating structure because it didn't have a means of propulsion or a steering wheel on it anymore. And so we had to go through the process, and Susan worked this diligently as a floating structure to where we had to do the process. The city had to do the process because the state didn't have a mechanism for it. And we had to do advertisement for 2 weeks. We had to, it was a piece of abandoned property at that point. Right. And we were able to get the thing destroyed. But that was right dead in the middle of the Ortega River at the time.
Right, so that's a good point, Jim. So we had the same notice. So we basically copied FWC's notice. You know, the 21 days, the big red sticker, the whole thing, and then we're able to do it. So an FWC defines floating structure differently than we did. And they actually have a very good video about the difference between a derelict vessel and average vessel and a floating structure. And I don't know how many hours it was, but it was very informational.
Sounds thrilling. maritime law, right? Any other comments?
No, I think that as long as we've got the authority to legal authority to tow or to deal with the structures, then it's just a matter of putting a procedure in place and then figuring out. We can get creative when it comes down to penalties. We can get creative for where those penalties go. Mm-hmm. I know that, like, for our, some of the penalties we get for demolishing structures, unsafe structures, goes into, replenish the fund.
Kind of what I was thinking.
So, and then I guess maybe another thing is one way, and I don't know what kind of local control we have over this as far as license, registration, can we tack on a mooring fee at marinas? Can we do, something like that to come up with a mechanism for funding you know, by the users kind of thing. You know, it's...
That's exactly what I was about to ask. I don't own a boat. And after serving on a ship for many years, I don't know if I want to own one.
I'm interested. Let me know.
What kind of fees are in place when you own a vessel? How often, you know, is it every year that you have to get a license for your vessel? Is that a state license? Is that done by the county? Okay. So where do those monies go? Do they all go to the state, or do some go to the
we
county?
We get them back.
We get some of it back.
Okay.
Some of them go to dedicated uses, too, right. Like boat ramps and stuff.
Okay.
Most of our improvements for docks repairs all comes from our VBIP dollars that we get back from registrations, every vessel registration.
Does the state give us the right to add on to some of those fees for whether it be boat ramps or other programs?
Yes, there's one.
I don't know the answer.
Oh.
There's one that we can, I don't know how much that would generate.
What is that fee?
Oh, gosh, I have to look it up.
Okay.
I just remember there is one, and we haven't taken advantage of it.
Go ahead, Brian.
I don't have the answer to that question, but for funding related, the ordinance 2022-61 for the that set up the anchor implementation area appropriated $200,000 into the derelict vessel and floating structure removal fund. The idea was that was seed money, mm-hmm. and every time we removed a vessel, we could use that as our initial, you know, our source fund. And then when we get reimbursed on the back end by FWC, which is now 100%, which is fantastic, it would just be this revolving fund, money in, money back out. You know,
it's only for derelict vessels.
Yeah.
It works for derelict vessels. It does not work for floating structure, so that's a drain. But those are infrequent, I think. So I guess my question was, how much is left in that account? Because I believe it's under your management now, so...
It is under, and I was trying to text with Danny because he has it, but he doesn't know, so we'll get back. But I don't believe we did one floating structure,
okay.
But I don't think it was ever taken out, so I don't know that the money was actually used.
Now all that to say, if we go with, what was the group in Arlington?
Oh, I take it back. He just emailed back. There's $165,000
going
forward.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It doesn't roll back into
general. Well, what do you know?
So it's carry forward each year. It's $165,000 in
there. Well, towing and storage fee, and then you get that reimbursed from the owner. You know,
fees and fines, right?
Back to that account and just keeps.
Because
now, first off, how much would it cost? How much do we? Does anyone even know how much it would cost to do like a year long deal with the Arlington Marina or whatever to allow for 20 slips or? Like, I don't even know how that would work. But
they'd pull them out and they'd set them in a side lot that's not being used.
Okay.
The answer to your question is we don't have an absolute number because we don't have any baseline to start with.
Sure.
And we'd have to start with a number and see where it went because with an RFP, that would be – we don't even know how much they will charge us for that type of stuff because we can't ask them how much it's going to cost because we got to bid it out and wait for a bid process to go through.
Real quick.
Keep from being illegal.
1 second. Where does JSO store the vessels?
Store our vessels? Or
yeah. Where do you repair them and everything else?
We have a marine unit facility next to the Lions Club boat ramp, and it's a standalone facility. It was built probably 2010 through a grant. We have our own dock. It's a secure facility, but we have no room to pull derelict vessels there and store them there.
The grant was received in 2006. And
sorry, just one second.
Took a process in 2010, it was built.
And Mr. Harley, I'm sorry, you had your hand up.
We need to look at the other counties in Florida and see who has solved this problem ahead of us so that we don't go reinventing something.
Certainly.
The bad part about it is that there are a lot of them who haven't gotten all the way. They've got some of it here and some of it there.
Somebody may have an idea on this.
I was having to look in Seattle to find stuff to give to Susan a couple of years ago about the structures laws that were out there.
They like floating structures in Seattle. Oh, yeah. Sleepless in Seattle. What was the...
They don't have hurricanes in Seattle.
Talking about that. Were you talking about the anchoring area, or are you talking about derelict vessels?
Well, either one, but, you know, I'd be interested to know what other counties are doing. And has anyone... I got to believe out of 67 counties, St. John's County is one, and some others have are further down this road than we are.
Nope.
They're not.
Well, if you're talking about derelict vessels and the removal of derelict vessels, Escambia County is way ahead of us, and they have a system, and their fellow, his name is Robert Turpin, I believe is his name. He works in a section of the county, kind of like what Melissa does, so the environmental quality. Their sheriff's office is different than ours. The mayor or the county administrator controls the sheriff's office, so he can say, go out there and do it, and then they do it. So they actually have a system where they get 100% of their stuff turned over. They pick it up out of the water, and then they get reimbursed by FWC. So they have a pretty good system, and they just kind of keep it going. But they have, you know, they can
It's a completely different paradigm.
Their form of JSO what to do, which we can't.
Our problem here is that it seems like we've got the front end, which was Wyman's legislation and that he helped with quite a bit, legislation for all of it, but, you know, getting Boat USA going. And then we've kind of got the back end where LEO, point of contact, I think we're sort of clear on where we're going there. We just got a mess in the middle. What's the process?
And we've done it during storm relief efforts, like after Irma, mm-hmm. we had the lot set up in Green Cove, and then over at the Tally Rand area, but as soon as that went away, so did the program.
The authorization and the procedures of the process is in place. It's just a matter of the mechanism for running through the process. The anchoring zone ordinance, I think the only other one, it is Broward County, or
yeah.
where they did one down there in the Intercoastal Waterway. And we were the second one. So we're on the cutting edge of a lot. And a lot of counties, most counties in the state of Florida, they let FWC handle it. They don't touch them. They don't mess with them. They could care less. FWC has to do all the work to make a derelict vessel or a floating structure or a at risk. They don't enforce it. So around the state of Florida, we're pretty well covered ahead of the game on that already, to be honest with you.
So real quick, so... Does FWC tow any vessels?
Depends.
Okay. And where do you tow them to?
So, first of all, I'm going to say it is against our policy to tow a vessel.
That's great. Can't wait to write you a new policy.
However, statute also allows us to tow if it's at risk of damaging other property. So that all depends on the officer operating, the vessel that they're operating, wind and sea conditions, and where they tow it to, which is why a lot of times they end up on the county docks.
So, real quick. So do you guys own, you know, Market for the Water Management District? We worked heavily with FWC. There were a ton of lands that I know both entities own. During an Irma, during whatever else, do you have temporary places like you mentioned in Green Cove, or do you bring them to a state-owned facility?
No, when it's declared an emergency like that, the state will come in and they'll set up contracts with companies. So like I said, the boat yard down at Green Cove Springs or Tally Rand, it's a temporary contract basis. We don't have any waterfront property our office is off of Arlington Expressway. We beg for boat slips.
See, look, right now the problem has been is that we get to it so late that mm-hmm. by the time you pull a boat somewhere, you're basically dragging it to the boat ramp and there's a dumpster sitting there waiting with three guys in chainsaws. There isn't any of this, hey, let's take it to the dock and see if we can work it out with the boat owner. The things probably either hit the bottom or come close to hitting the bottom. So this is a little bit undiscovered country for us here. And that's why I think the process is so important, because we can't even get an RFP without kind of understanding the timelines that then we can tell these vendors, hey, you could be stuck with this thing for X number of days, and then they can do their planning, and then we can decide how much land we need. Boom, 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 boom.
Well, I'm also wondering if maybe we do tie into our friends up in Tallahassee, and we say, all right, maybe we have legislation in here where JSO is able to tow a vessel to a county or a city-owned dock, and then FWC takes it to maybe one of their places, if they were able to get a lease negotiated with somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that way we make it a state issue. JSO takes it to wherever temporarily, and then FWC takes it on from there. And that's, I don't know, it just kind of dawned on me right now, but if that's not really in your mission or if that's, you know, well, I don't know, I'm just kind of kicking around ideas. That way it wouldn't be a massive issue for maybe some of my other friends on council. But I don't know how much some of these leases would be with Arlington Marina or what this tow contract would be. Also, how many vessels do we think in a year would we consider at risk and to be towed?
My suspicion would be is that's front end loaded, and then you'll hit your maintenance. As people start to understand with notice to mariners and so forth that you don't get to dump your boat here anymore, we'll have a rush, and then after that we'll have to see what our appetite is after that. But
I can't say now, and maybe the sergeant can give a number as to how many vessels actually qualified that if they had a procedure for towing it, how many a year they feel like they would. But from my experience back when I did it, we're talking 10 a year, maybe, as a good average number.
For derelicts?
For ones that would qualify to be towed, not derelicts. But we wouldn't move derelicts. Mm-hmm. We would move at-risk and vessels that are
abandoned
or either illegally docked or anchored. And that would solve half, three-fourths probably of the derelict problem.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you're moving them before
they get to the derelict status of us not being able to do anything with them.
Sure.
That's the phrase, at risk.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I'm wondering is what other, I know we have the potential one other fee. We've got the $165,000 that we probably could move, frankly. I'm sure that's not a heavy lift, but what else are we authorized to add to do other fees or increase fees or say if we tow, like if the city is tow, if we pay Arlington to tow it, are we allowed to have the individual reimburse us?
The law already is in place. If that vessel is being, if it's an at-risk or if it's a derelict vessel or if it's a vessel that gets moved and is under a storage situation, the owner's responsible for paying that money of what it costs already. And if they don't pay it, then a DHSMV lien gets placed on their record, not that vessel or not that vehicle, their record. And so therefore, until they pay those fees or whatever it costs, they can't get a tag, they can't get a permit for a travel trailer, they can't get a registration on a boat, and all they can get is a bicycle.
Take
it.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, as long as it's effective, because that is a general question, right? Like, are we ever able
and
to get
so
those dollars?
What you would do is they would pay the all the fees, and the only thing that we would be having to pay is what it would, if there was one that we had to destroy that they didn't come along, and
charming.
Then the lien went in place.
It's your time to shine. Jump in there.
We would have to pay the wrecker or the marina or whoever did the storage up front, and then the lien would have to be placed.
It would be good
in
to kind of...
We wouldn't want the marina or the tow company to be left not whole at the end of the day.
It would be good to have a general idea of what that contract might look like. Obviously, if it's well below $165,000, that'd be great. And I would envision that it would be, but what do I know? All right, we kind of got to wrap this up. Any kind of final thoughts? I was kind of joking, but John, you haven't said anything yet. Anything from the state attorney's office?
We really only get involved when it becomes the derelict vessel and punish on the back end. So we've had communications with JSO and FWC about warning us ahead of time which ones are at risk and leading up to that, to the extent that we're on notice. But unfortunately, we can't really do much until it's at that derelict stage.
Roger. Go ahead, Jim. What were you about to say?
Is that the state attorney's office?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can do something at the at-risk stage.
Once it becomes nuisance, right?
At risk.
Oh, to get the three.
Right. That's the biggest thing that they wanted you to talk to you about.
Well, once if it's an IN infraction case, we don't have anything to do with that. I think where there was an issue a while back is the clerk's office would refer some of those citations to us for willful failure to pay, which we do get involved in, but with the people who are in Connecticut and it just says citation mailed, that's not beyond a reasonable doubt that we can prove that we would say we are not going to pursue this criminally. The clerk's office was treating that as the citation being dismissed. I thought we had corrected that, and if the clerk's office doing that again, that's certainly an issue.
So should
but we are not involved.
Can we include Mr. Phillips into maybe one of these conversations to go on that edge of it? Because that's that would be the. I think that could be cleared up real quick. I didn't know that they had that authority. I thought they had to be referred to the state attorney. But if you're, they can just drop them if they wanted that at the clerk's office. Don't have to go through a judge.
They were. I mean, when they were saying if we didn't pursue the criminal failure to pay. They were just entering, somebody at a low level there was just entering a dismissal of the citation, and I met with the head of the misdemeanor division of the clerk's office. She passed the word along to her staff. That's not what's supposed to happen. She felt like it was corrected. I've checked in on it in the last few months, so I would be curious if they've slipped back into doing that.
Yeah, the first one that we've really seen is the one at Stinson Park right now. Those citations started getting issued back in October, and I'm assuming they're working their way up to y'all's office now because the guy disappeared and he hasn't paid them.
Yeah, so give me, if you don't mind real quick, just give me what are the next 30 days looking like for that Stinson Park boat right now?
We can give you an update of where it is and what's going on with it through the lieutenant there right now.
All right.
So we're submitting a warrant for his arrest.
Cool.
He's also got, I think, 7 or 8 citations that have not been paid for the at-risk. So we're waiting on the results from that. The officer just opened up a derelict vessel packet on that boat. However, once we issued him that last citation and the boat washed up and it was derelict, he has since disappeared into Jacksonville. So that's where we're hitting that delay, right? So we have to find him, issue him a notification, or go through the process that basically we've exhausted all means to locate him further, which is why we're trying to get the warrant.
Are we going to see his face on the news? Have you seen this derelict boat owner? If so, he's dangerous.
I like that idea.
At the end of the day, he should be getting warrants for the failure to pay citations.
I was about to say.
And then
put it at Lillian's.
We'll find him.
So the difference between being able to start taking immediate action to remove the boat versus taking immediate action to remove a vehicle is with a car. Is that with a car, you don't necessarily have to find the person. It just has to be there for a minute. And we may need to translate into that, even though I know that you still have some considerations and that navigation is a right and running on the roads is a privilege. I get that, but at a certain point, you've illegally docked in this case, or you're illegally storing. At a certain point, it's not navigating. And that's been my perspective for the last decade, and I finally got folks to say, there is a little bit of difference. So I really kind of think that if we can get to that point where you're not stuck tracking down somebody who's got 5 times out of 10 a hoarding issue, and they've got boats all over the place, and I've talked to a lot of these guys and gals, and they just collect, and then they don't know what to do.
But you're absolutely right. Having a place to take, that's a great example. Having a place to take that boat and store it while we go through the process makes the in-state cheaper and a ton easier because every day it sets out there, it's only getting worse.
Well, and having that place is to get the bids to have that place is going to rely on timing that's basically driven by this team. And we haven't had that. And if we could get this timing closed down so that the marinas know what they're actually bidding on, we can get that question answered in a heartbeat.
All right, so we got some homework to do. There's 5 attorneys at this meeting right now. If you haven't noticed, there's too many. 6. Jesus. You all outnumber us. Are you an attorney?
I'm impressed.
But so please get together with our friend Captain Sieber here and try to figure out what kind of corrections we need to make to the ordinance and maybe what we need to do in terms of an appropriation request or will we do a sole source contract or will we do an open contract?
We have to
be
RFP.
Hmm?
I think it has to be open.
Can we do it? Okay.
We'd have to. I'm sure it'd have to be an RFP. We couldn't do a sole source because there may be more than one that's willing to do it.
All that to say, though, if we can find an anonymous individual try to find what a reasonable number would look like. If it's over 165, I'm sure people will be very upset. So let's try to get an appropriate number.
It would probably have to be a situation. We got to get into the weeds with that, but it would be a per tow cost, mm-hmm. per storage cost, mm-hmm. not a max number of 160. When we could make the where we don't do it anymore once we hit our, just like when we go to West Marine, we spend money all year long, but once we hit the number that we're given, we don't spend no more. And so it would be that type of situation.
Could it be and this is just the way my brain works, is like how JSO tows vehicles, there's a tow list.
Right.
So if there was a certain number of eligible, willing, and they can handle it, they've got the right lift, they've got all that kind of stuff, could it end up being a vessel tow list, but tow and storage?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes,
absolutely.
So it may not be.
We've got the procedures the JSO and the tow companies use. I've already been talking to their Office of Record Regulations. And the system, we don't need to, like you said, we don't need to reinvent the wheel there. We can almost follow that system by just, instead of using record companies, use vessel towing companies and marinas that have we'd have to put the parameters to what kind of equipment you're required to have.
Right.
And you have to have the ability to do this, this, and this. We would have to come up with a scope.
Sure. So what I'm going to say, so tomorrow we've got our waterways commission. We'll kind of brief everyone on what this meeting was all about, some of the conversations that we had. By the next waterways commission meeting, if we could have a few options and hopefully some discussions about what ordinance changes might look like, we could hopefully move from there and maybe craft a bill right there. Maybe not craft a bill right there, but be able to kind of get the opinion of those in the commission, and then I could present that to City Council in the weeks and months to come afterward. So does that work?
Yes.
All right. Mr. Barker, thank you for setting this all up.
Yes, sir.
There are no public comment cards, I hope? Great. All right. Meeting adjourned.
Ladies and gentlemen, the talent in this room is greatly appreciated. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you all. I walked in, I was like, there's too many people in here.
This has been.
Oh, that's why you had it in the big room.
I know. Well, honestly, she's like, Red Linwood. I'm like, who's coming to this?
For what?
For derelict vessels. We got the state attorney's office here. I guess so, yeah.
No problem.
I try to grease the skids. I'm like, let's move this along. Let's go.
You okay with it?
You got it going. I said the only thing, when I shot you that thing, I shot you the thing same weeks back. I was like, did you get it? I don't know.
I swear, he texts me.
It's so much faster.
What up?
I didn't want to disrespect, but...
Never. Okay. It's right. The fastest and best way to get in touch with you.
This is... I'm sure you've been hearing about the...
We could use something.
He said backflow.
We're looking at...
Do you need for stormwater?
No.
So,
the water supply line's going between your house,
but he will,
your business.
Is he wanting to have the police, or is he wanting to actually build his own?
They do in new construction, but they don't require
ballroom.
In...
I didn't know that. I thought he was looking for a building.
We're trying to get... Well, if there is a building that we can buy, that would be great. What we really want is... the property that we can build a building on.
Yeah.
And, I mean, in this case, you kind of go together, and you've got a storage site.
The only problem with that is you've got to have the equipment, right? You've got to have a lift and everything, and that's what we don't couldn't have. Thank y'all. Appreciate you coming. Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
We might can get something going on, folks.
Hopefully, I mean, you know, that was my big goal.
I understand your point. Totally. I don't like your point, but I understand it. That's why we got you.
y'all to keep us out of trouble. But that's it's still, we're on the right track. We got to start doing it.
Yeah.
Whatever it works out to. Behind the scene issues that a lot of people see, but not many people know.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you. It's a pleasure to meet you. I'm sorry you're so polite over there. I'm like, it's all right. Meeting is like,
good to see you. Take
care. You're only that when I have something to say. I mean,
boy. Thank you again.
Sure.
Appreciate you. Yeah. How you doing, Jim Super?
Yeah, Terrence Harvey. Nice to meet you.
Hey, Terrence, nice
to
meet you.
He's going to be taking over for me when I leave the Inorn.
Oh, yeah.
How are you?
Good, sir.
Yeah.
How are you?
Going well, thank you. Who are you already working with somebody on that warrant for $1,500?
So I spoke with the officer working the case on
Friday. Me too.
Okay.
She's a newer officer.
So...
Okay, so I got
to
set up.
Marine coordinator. Yeah. Well, so you guys are actually doing work.
I'm a facilitator, I'm a coordinator, I'm not a decision maker.
Well,